Welcome everybody to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined by no one. I am here to answer the second half of the questions that you guys had for the mailbag this week. There are still a ton to get to, so I'm going to dive right into that. Usually I would have done that yesterday, but, you know, Magic took a torch to everybody. So here we are. As always, you guys know where to find the show, and if you're looking for a place to find podcasts, check out Himalaya. They have been great in partnering with us and offering us their platform and supporting the shows and the network and various other ways beyond that. So the more that we support companies like that and the companies that support us, the more companies are going to be willing to support the show and the more options that we have to continue to grow this thing. So we'll keep that thing rolling as well. Today's show is going to be brought to you in part by Hotels.com, by Grip 6 Belts, and by Untuckit.com. Check out all of those great sponsors. Same kind of reasoning that I talked about in a little bit. So let's start here with the first question. Belly123789 is asking about Luke Walton and Frank Vogel and how the two coaches stack up. To be completely honest, they're very similar. They are both mediocre coaches, okay coaches. They both have cut their teeth on the defensive side of the ball. The one thing that Vogel said in his press conference that I think should really catch everybody's ear was him utilizing the last year or so to run around and tour various NBA teams. He didn't get into specifics about, you know, which teams he met with and what things he was focused on learning. But, you know, if you aren't going to be actually in the league, then that's a great way to stay in touch with things and stay up on the modernization, the continued modernization of basketball in general. So that was great to hear. If Vogel is able to implement some of the more modern principles that maybe he studied up on while he was touring the NBA, I think he's probably a better overall coach than Walton. He's older. I believe Frank Vogel is 45 and Luke Walton is about 38. Maybe 40 tops, and so Vogel has a little bit more experience there, and maybe he's more ready-made for the situation he's going to be coaching in. Remember, Luke Walton was hired to coach a young team and develop alongside that young team, right? He was not equipped to handle the expectations and the situation that was dealt to him when the Lakers signed LeBron James. So I think just in this respect, Vogel has the slight upper hand just in terms of experience, and we'll see how things go. Now, is he such an upgrade that I'm willing to shout from the mountaintops about the hiring of Frank Vogel? Not quite. You know, it could work out, but as of right now, he might be a slight upgrade, and we'll see if that gap grows. We also have to see how Walton does in Sacramento. Right? So that's going to be interesting to watch as well. Next question is a long one from E. Rubin. Basically, it's the thesis here. It's a long one. And look, I'm not, beggars can't be choosers. So those of you who are sending in questions, I hugely appreciate it. I will usually read through them and get through them. But I would prefer if you guys could keep these a little shorter so I can actually read your writing. I would imagine those of you who send in questions would prefer that I actually read them verbatim. But if they get to be this long, I can't waste that much, or not waste or use that much time on the question itself. So the basis of the question is like, when are the Lakers going to stop getting in their own way, right? What can the Lakers do to stop working against themselves? And it's frankly pretty simple, and they've passed up on the opportunity is find people who've actually been successful in these roles, right? Find people who have been around winners and have had firsthand experience helping teams win. Pelinka has helped his clients win, but he hasn't helped an NBA team win before. Kurt Rambis helped a team win from, or a few teams win from the assistant coaching spot. But when he was asked to take on more responsibility, he was a disaster, right? Phil Jackson apparently is coming in every so often. Obviously, one of the greatest coaches that any professional sport has ever seen. But again, was a disaster when he was in New York. So you look at the other people. I mean, Tim Harris, no experience. Len Arambas, no experience, right? The Lakers, the reason they keep getting in their own way is because they don't know any better. They don't know any better, and they can't recognize when they're actually getting in their own way. And you know, maybe this experience of getting dragged through the mud, that the way that the Lakers have been, is going to help everybody involved recognize, okay, we can't keep doing this. But for right now, the only way that they're going to learn and quickly enough is to bring in people who actually know what they're doing. And as of right now, there's nobody in the front office who I could honestly say that about. Let's go one more question. We'll go one more question here. MG's Raiders is asking a question about for Pete and I, so I'm going to come back to that one when Pete and I record next. Jesse the Lakers fan writes, "Hi Anthony, huge fan of your contract. You and Pete make a great backcourt. I enjoy the takes of the takes on our Lakers. Question: are you willing to part with, or what are you willing to part with for AD now that we have the fourth pick and they have the first? I personally would give up the fourth pick, Kuzma, and a 2020 first round pick. By all means, keep Ingram and Lonzo. Awesome show. Go Lakers." You're going to have to part with one of them, right? So I guess in this sense, what I'm willing to part with doesn't matter as much as what Lakers are probably going to have to part with, right? What I'm willing to part with is like Mo Wagner, Rob Pelinka, Jeannie Buss, and like a conditional second rounder. But, you know, that's not really going to happen. The in terms of what I think probably gets a deal done is that fourth overall pick. Probably Ingram. I don't think New Orleans is all that interested in Lonzo. And then probably both of Kuzma and Hart. And then probably they'd probably have to offer up a pick beyond the LeBron era, right? So, because if you're New Orleans, do you really want to trade Anthony Davis to a team and then take on first round picks while LeBron and Anthony Davis are on the team? Probably not, right? You want to wait for at least one of those guys to go, and then even in that case, you're kind of sort of hoping that something goes wrong and you get a higher pick. You know, you have those variables in play. So I think if you're the Lakers and you offer, you know, the number four pick, Lonzo, Ingram, Kuzma, and like a 20, I think it's 21 or 22 first round pick, you could probably get the deal done with that. And you might even be able to hold on to one of Kuzma or Hart. You're going to offer up Brandon Ingram, the number four pick, a 2021 or later first round pick, and then probably either and or Josh Hart and Kyle Kuzma. Got it. We're going to take a quick second here, and when we come back, I'm going to keep on answering your questions. All right, MTalby010 writes, "Love the show, thank you. And I hope for nothing but good fortunes for and health for you and the little one on the way. Really appreciate that. On a negative note, with the Lakers having the fourth pick in the draft now, how badly can Jeannie Pelinka and Rambis screw this up? I hope they can use this as a great starting point for free agency, but I have very little confidence in management and ownership. Can you talk me off the ledge?" This is going to sound hugely pessimistic, right? This is going to sound hugely negative, but I mean it from an expectation standpoint. I don't mean always assume the worst, though recently you can understand why somebody would do that kind of thing. But I'll put it like this. When I was working in PR, and really generally anybody in sales who has to work with people, The one of the top priorities, if not the top priority, is managing expectations and managing, in this case, clients' expectations, right? If I was walking into an office and the person or company that I was working with is going through some kind of a crisis, I'm not going to walk in there and say, all right, I'm going to solve everything, right? Because what happens if I don't solve everything? Then I'm in trouble, right? But what you do say in those spots is, all right, so this is the situation that we have ahead of us. These are some of the obstacles that we're going to run into while we try to navigate this new situation. And this is how best I think we can get this done with as little damage as we can possibly take in, right? We're going to take a couple licks off our jaw. We're gonna take a few hits in the media. But, you know, if you're looking for ways to actually navigate this situation and get through this as unscathed as you can possibly be, then I'm your guy, right? And all that does is it means that from the very get-go, from the very beginning of that professional relationship, I and that client have a fair understanding of what we're all capable of in that moment, right? In this case, as a Laker fan, I would say manage your expectations. Does it make any sense whatsoever to get ahead of yourself and say, the Lakers are going to draft, maybe Ja Morant is going to fall a couple spots. Maybe, R.J. Barrett might fall a spot because the Knicks are going to do Knicks things. And the Lakers can walk away with R.J. Barrett and they'll be able to sign Kawhi Leonard. And you know, if that doesn't work out, maybe you can trade for Anthony Davis too. And you can walk away with this. Like, yes, in theory, that's possible. Right. In theory, I could get any client through any situation completely unscathed and have no problem whatsoever in dealing with the media in that respect. That happens sometimes. but setting yourself up with those kinds of expectations is a great way to have those expectations not met. And at the end of the day, if those expectations are unrealistic and they aren't met, then that disappointment that you're feeling, yes, the team that you're rooting for obviously played a role in not meeting those expectations and thus affecting that disappointment. But you also kind of have to look in the mirror and say, all right, was I really being realistic and hoping that Kawhi Leonard would take a veteran minimum contract so that the Lakers could also sign Kevin Durant, right? Probably not. and you gotta take that situation from there as you will. Next question here. And look, in terms of like how they'll screw this up or how they might screw it up, look, they might take like Cam Reddish. They might reach for him and he doesn't reach his potential. And it turns out that the college shortcomings that he had are going to show themselves again in the NBA. Maybe they whiff on free agents and bring in DeMarcus Cousins, who just gets hurt all over again, right? Like, there are ways that they can screw this up, just like there are ways to make this work. It's just a matter of setting your expectations at a spot where they can realistically be met. Next question comes from D3DS. Hi, Anthony. Why are people down on Ja Morant as a Laker? I don't think it's so much that people are down on him as a Laker or down as him as a prospect. It's more that he's probably going to go second overall. I believe, actually, the Grizzlies have already kind of sort of leaked that that's the direction that they're going in. So why, at this point, try to convince yourself that Ja Morant makes any sense for the Lakers when he's probably going number one overall, right? It's not that I'm down on Zion Williamson. It's that I know for a fact the Lakers don't have a chance at getting him, right? And in this case, it's not as sure a thing as it is with Zion Williamson. Maybe some things go wrong with Ja Morant over the course of the combine and getting, you know, individual team workouts, whatever the situation might be. But as of right now, why get your hopes up for somebody who probably isn't going to be available when the Lakers are picking if by the way, they also actually use that pick? Let's go one more question here. Devin Jan writes, basically the premise of the question, and they said they didn't want me to talk about it on the show, but I just want to, I didn't mean when Devin asked about, you know, pay and that having to do anything with clicks or listens or whatever, there felt like an implication there. Apparently there wasn't, but I never have a problem with being completely honest with you guys. This show would suck if I was anything less than completely honest with you. Let's go one more question here. Surfer Gertz, SurrFgrSgts writes, "Hi, Anthony. Love the podcast. Thanks. I have two questions. I'm afraid to say with all the incompetent heads in the Lakers front office, Rob Pelinka almost looks good to me. Before all this news about the Rambai and Phil Jackson being shadow executives, I couldn't stand Pelinka. Oddly enough, it seems now like Pelinka is probably the one who I trust most in making the majority of the moves and decisions for the Lakers, which is terrifying to say the least. Who do you trust the most in the Lakers front office? The obvious answer is no one, but if you had to pick one person in charge of decision-making currently in the front office, who would it be? And do you think there is any chance Jeannie Buss miraculously wakes up and goes after one of the top executives for the PBO job? It blows my mind how almost everyone outside the Lakers, and even probably some within the organization, can see this as the obvious move to make, yet Jeannie is oblivious." To answer the first question, Rob Pelinka is probably the name to go with here, the person I probably trust most, which is, again, terrifying, as this person says. Rob Pelinka right now is known as a backstabber. That's the reputation he has to overcome. That said, we haven't seen him fail as spectacularly as Kurt Rambis did, as Phil Jackson did, right? Maybe those guys learned from those situations, but when you're looking for people to learn from things, you have to find the reason for which they would learn, right? Why would Phil Jackson learn from his stint in New York? He's not going to be an executive ever again. And he's a made man. He's rich as all hell. There's no reason for him to change his ways, right? Kurt Rambis has failed upward his whole life, or his whole post-playing career, right? Like, what reason is there for him to learn about learn from his mistakes? He got a promotion, so. In those respects, if maybe there was a reason for those guys to learn their lessons, then I would say that maybe their experiences could be a net positive. But I just don't trust that that's actually the case. In Pelinka's case, we don't know. We don't know what he's actually capable of. So in this case, I'm going with the mystery box over the two dumpster fires that are sitting side by side. Let's go. Let's take a quick second here, and when we come back, I'm going to try to get to the rest of all the questions for this week's mailbag. All right, Initium 73 writes, "Hi Anthony, you're awesome, and I really enjoy the show. Thank you." Questions: should the Lakers make an effort to possibly sign Brook Lopez and/or Julius Randle? Both have an option to leave their current teams. Do you feel it's a possibility, or is the damage between the Lakers and those players too severe to fix? Also, I think keeping our young core and keeping a player at number 4 in the 29 in the draft could be more beneficial than trading everyone for AD. Thoughts? Regarding AD, I think I understand kind of why people want to just roll with rebuilding, or not even rebuilding, but acquiring assets, acquiring players through the draft. That's the most connected a fan base is going to be, is with the players that they draft, right? And also, like, you compare this LeBron James, this first season of the LeBron James era, to the slow progress that the Lakers were making while they were growing and developing their team through the draft. And it's kind of hard to make the case that this last season was any more fun than the seasons prior, when you could actually watch D'Angelo Russell make progress. You could watch Julius Randle grow before our eyes. Same with Brandon Ingram, right? So I kind of understand the tendency or the desire to go that route, but nobody that the Lakers have right now, and nobody that the Lakers could possibly draft, none of those players are going to be as good as Anthony Davis is right now. And if you have an opportunity to get that guy, then you go out and get that guy, especially while you have LeBron on your team. In terms of the second half of that question, or maybe even the first half of the question, oh yeah, it was the first half. Yes, Brook Lopez and Julius Randle, I'm willing to go out there, stick my neck out there, and say that those guys are going to opt out. There's plenty of teams with cap space, and both those guys have skill sets that really help teams win in the modern NBA. I want to say that maybe that there's still a means by which the Lakers could maybe land a Brook Lopez and maybe land a Julius Randle, but I would probably set that likelihood at about 15%. That for one thing, that's not where the Lakers' priorities are going to be. And by the time the Lakers find out what the deal is with superstar X, the thinking is probably Julius Randle and Brook Lopez will have found new destinations by that point. So. We'll see how that goes. And look, the other thing, too, with Aaron Mintz in regards to Julius Randle is that, you know, the problem was never, I don't think, between Aaron Mintz and Magic Johnson. I believe, based on stuff that I've heard and read, that was more of a Rob Pelinka thing, and Rob Pelinka is still working with the Lakers. So read for that what you will. Let's go with the next question. Vet57 writes, at what point can the Lakers begin to engage other teams like Washington and New Orleans for trades without tampering? Is there an exact date, or can they start now since we've all missed the playoffs, or they're all out of the playoffs? I believe that teams can kind of sort of have those conversations right now. The teams that are out of the playoffs. There can't be like any actual offers made, but you can get around some of these rules. Joe Varden reported that while he was there at the combine, he saw Rob Pelinka and David Griffin engaged in some kind of a conversation. Right? Again, take for that what you will. Take from that what you will. That's worth, you know, monitoring, obviously. But I believe in order to have like the actual trade negotiations here where all these teams can get involved and all these conversations can fully take place, that needs to happen after the end of the finals. That's when the season officially ends, and that's when these teams can officially have their talks. Next question here comes from JMac2450. Hey, Anthony. I'm sure this will be discussed heaps over the next couple months, but do you still think trading for AD is the right move? I think we're better off using the pick to get Beal and waiting for AD the following year. Our 2020/2021 starting lineup would be Ball, Beal, B.I., LBJ, and AD. It would be extremely short-sighted to trade away everyone to get 1 year of Davis. Would love to hear your thoughts. So that I don't think can even happen, because by the time Anthony Davis becomes a free agent, Brandon Ingram will also, I believe, at the very least be, if he isn't up for his extension, he'll be up for restricted free agency, and thus his cap hold will be such that you cannot sign Anthony Davis while you also employ Bradley Beal. Like that, I'll put it this way. I think Bradley Beal by that time is going to be making about 20, maybe about $30 million, maybe even higher. LeBron, I think by that point, is going to be making about 38. And then Anthony Davis at that point will be on the market, and his max will be in that same kind of $35 million or even if not $38 million range, $39 million range. And you add all those things up, and there just isn't very much space if you have literally anybody else left on your roster, which the Lakers will have, right? So while I understand, like I said, I get why fans want to build through the draft. It's probably the lowest leverage kind of situation that these teams can have. You can invest in development. It's a nice slow process. You can just kind of let it roll, right? But once you go and you acquire a LeBron, or you acquire an Anthony Davis or Kawhi, whatever superstar that you want to name here, those expectations come in, and you know, that's kind of the theme of this podcast, right? Is the impact expectation has on results and the perception of those results. Let's go. Next question here comes from, somebody here is complaining about us laughing at the Celtics. You're not a Laker fan. Perez Marcus writes, let's keep the young core and trade LeBron to New Orleans for Zion. Thoughts? Not going to happen. Next question comes from QBreezy12. What's the deal with Windhorse and others saying the Celtics and the Knicks have a better package than the Lakers? I'm all for criticizing stupid organization when it does stupid things, but that seems like an outright bias. Thanks, and I'd love to hear you have Ben Rosales on sometime soon. I plan on having him on at some point because he knows a lot more about the draft than I do. In terms of the analysis of those packages, I think the Celtics, if they are willing to include Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum and all their draft capital, and they're willing to sit down at the negotiation table and throw all that out there, then there's an argument to be made about that package, right? Now, do I think they're lapping the field the way that others seem to think that they're lapping the field, or that offer laps the field? No, I don't. I just flat out disagree with that. I think there's a case to be made for both the Lakers package and for the Celtics package. The one that I really don't get is the Knicks one, right? Now, maybe the Pelicans are just that high on RJ Barrett or whoever they want to take third, right? Maybe that's just that they really feel like that's the guy that, you know, you want to pair RJ Barrett and Zion Williamson, former college teammates, and then, you know, now they would be pro teammates, and you're in a semi-close region to the Carolinas, which is Duke country, right? Maybe you think that that's the pairing that really helps you get the most bang for your buck in terms of selling tickets, but I don't think they have to worry about that right now, right? We already heard that they sold 3,500, if not more, season passes for next year because they look like they're going to be able to draft Zion Williamson. So, yeah, I don't – the Knicks thing I don't get. Kevin Knox was not good last year. Mitchell Robinson has potential and showed flashes of being, you know, at least pretty good, but – is he any more talented than Ingram or Lonzo? No, not really. Brian Windhorst listed Dennis Smith Jr. and Frank Ntilikina. I forget how to pronounce that guy's last. Frankie Smokes. He listed both those guys. Dennis Smith Jr. has already been traded because he was such a disappointment in Dallas. And Frankie wants out, right? He wants to be moved. So, like, I don't see the thing with the Knicks there. So, if I was listing packages, I would probably have the Lakers and Celtics 1A and 1B. You could swipe them out and have the Celtics 1A or the Lakers 1A, however you want to put it. And then the Knicks are pretty far back there. I just don't see the value in their trade package. And you know, the other thing too is people are saying, oh, well, they have the Dallas picks by way of the Porzingis trade. Well, Dallas is going to have Kristaps Porzingis, and they're going to have Luka Doncic, and they have cap space this year, and they have Rick Carlisle, who always gets more out of his teams, right? So they'll have middle-of-the-road picks there probably as well. So I don't see, in terms of actual assets, the number three pick is obviously more valuable than the number four pick. And then from there, everybody else's assets are pretty swappable, in my opinion. Let's go last question here, and we'll get out of here, and I will answer the rest of these over the course of the week if I have time as well. Chris Bryant 824 writes, hey Anthony, I really love Lonzo's game, and I'm not a fan of trading him if we don't need to, but do you think it would be more valuable to try to trade him to Chicago for the number 7 pick and then include number 4 and 7 in the potential deal for AD? Chicago is rumored to like Lonzo, and Griffin is on record saying he wouldn't want the family drama that comes with Lonzo. So it, maybe not this specific deal, right? I mean, it's worth looking at this, but just as a general point to make, this is how front offices operate when they really want a player. They say to the team that they're negotiating against, all right, these are our assets. This is the offer we're willing to make. How do you feel about these assets? How do you feel about this offer? They get the counter offer. Maybe they say, we want more draft capital, right? Maybe they say, we want another pick in this draft. Okay, fine. Let me see if I can go turn one of these players that maybe you're not as high on, in this case, Lonzo. What kind of pick could I trade? Could I turn Lonzo in to and then offer that player or offer that new package to you and get that done? If the Lakers are really dead set on Anthony Davis, maybe that's the path that they go. The reason why New Orleans might be interested in that is because of the financial flexibility that comes with that first-round pick. Lonzo Ball is already 2 years into his career, and that makes him 2 years closer to having to get paid. We already talked about this with Brandon Ingram, right? It wouldn't surprise me if the Pelicans approached the Lakers and said, okay, if you could turn Brandon Ingram into a high lottery pick, and then come to us with that high lottery pick, as well as the package that we have already talked about beyond that, then we might be able to work out a deal here. That to me seems as likely as any of the other outcomes. And look, there are a ton of outcomes here. Like, everybody's focused on the Lakers, the Knicks, and the Celtics, but look at the other trades that have gone on. Kawhi Leonard wasn't supposed to go to Toronto. Paul George wasn't supposed to go to OKC, right? Kyrie Irving didn't want to go to Boston when he initially demanded a trade out of Cleveland. There are all these situations here where a star hits the market and some team comes in with a miracle offer, and lo and behold, there goes that star. The one to keep an eye on here for me again, and it's always been in the back of my mind here, is what can the Denver Nuggets put together for Anthony Davis? Tim Connelly just turned down the Washington gig. He has as much job security as just about any executive in the league. Maybe he swings for the fences with some of the guys that he's getting ready to pay or maybe already has paid and wants to see Nikola Jokic and Anthony Davis in the front court together, right? That seems just as likely as any other outcome that we've talked about here. Maybe Philadelphia gets frustrated with Ben Simmons and his just disinterest in shooting a basketball, and they send him down to New Orleans, or send him elsewhere in some kind of three-team deal, and Anthony Davis winds up somewhere else. Whatever the deal might look like, it's very rarely the teams that you identified early on in the negotiation process that have walked away with the superstar in these kinds of situations. We'll see if maybe this is the outlier, but at, you know, to this point, it's very rarely the teams that you see coming. It's almost always some kind of mystery team. That'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Thank you guys very much for tuning in. Thank you guys very much for sending in your questions. Those help us. They help me give things to talk about. They help us keep the lights on. The show is continuing to kill it. Thank you guys very much for all of your help there. If you're looking for a place, though, to find a podcast, check out Himalaya. It's really cool. It's an awesome podcast app. It's an awesome platform, and their support of us has really helped out. So let's continue to help them. Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.